Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Highlander's Wild Flame by Heather McCollum. Narrated by Dave Gillis and Mary Morrison. The Battle of Solway Moss. Historical note. King Henry VIII wanted his nephew, James V of Scotland, to leave the Roman Catholic Church when England left, but King James ignored him. Henry, who hated to be ignored, sent English troops to set fire to some Scottish border towns. In retaliation, King James sent between 15,000 to 18,000 Scotsmen across the border into England to do the same. Sir Thomas Wharton, the English commander, managed to find approximately 3,500 Englishmen to stand against the Scots. They met on November 24, 1542, on a boggy heathland on the Esk River called Solway Moss. Due to confusion in the command of the Scots, the larger group of Scottish soldiers retreated, many getting caught in the bog, and some drowning. The English were victorious and took 1,200 Scottish prisoners back to London. It was a devastating loss that demoralised James V. For the most part, England's King Henry VIII treated the prisoners well, hoping to sway them to his cause. He even let some of the higher-ranking prisoners be exchanged for sons or other pledges if they assured the English king that they would support his push to have his son, Edward, marry the Scottish heir, Mary, Queen of Scots. In some cases, the pledges also became assured Scots, swearing their allegiance to England, and they were released to return to Scotland. However, some prisoners were kept in England and ill-handled, like the two sons of the Earl of Glencairn. Much to King Henry's irritation and likely fury, many of the assured Scots did not hold to their oaths to support England's plans for reformation and rule in Scotland. I could very well envision that some stubborn Scots pledges who refused to swear allegiance to England were kept prisoner and treated very poorly indeed. Prologue. Out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars. Khalil Gibran, 1883 to 1931, poet. 11th May 1544, Carlisle Castle Dungeon, Northwest England. Rory MacLeod let the growl sitting at the base of his throat rumble out of him. Low and long, like a guttural tumbling of rocks, it sounded like a warning rumble from a lion. After a year in Carlisle Castle's dungeon, he looked the part, with a mane of long, dirty hair, scars, a full beard, and lips that pulled back to show sharp teeth. Perhaps this was part of God's required penance for the devastating foolishness of his youth. He growled again, and the sound had the desired effect of making the English guards back up outside the narrow barred door. The barrels of their muskets bobbed, showing that the English trembled. "Move back," ordered one of the two guards who carried an unconscious Asher MacNicol between them. "Else we throw him in the moat." Cyrus MacKinnon and Keenan MacDonald stepped back. Rory would rather lunge, ripping into the guards. A year of hell had brought out the beast in him. He'd thought Keenan MacDonald and his clan were Rory's biggest enemy until he'd suffered the true foe, England. He pressed against the damp stone wall, and the guards dropped Asher on the musty straw clumped on the floor of the cell that the four of them shared. Rory stared hard at the Englishmen until they looked away, swallowing in discomfort. His amber-coloured eyes and disconcerting stare made most men look away, even when he was washed and dressed properly as a Highland chief's son. Now he looked half-beast, like his battle title implied. He would use every weapon he had against King Henry's men. "God's teeth," a guard said, staring at Rory. He was new, and Rory had the sudden desire to open his maw and roar at him to see if the man pissed himself. "He's the Lion of Skye," another guard said. "Don't look in his eyes. It'll make you unable to move so he can rip your throat out." Rory remained with the other two Highlanders while the guards backed quickly out, and one relocked the barred door. "If any of you Scots bastards try to escape like him, you'll get the same treatment or worse." The portly man spat on the ground. "The only way out is giving your oaths to England and paying the ransom due to the king." The three Highlanders glared at him, and he ordered his men away. The new guard cast a glance toward Rory, and Rory bared his teeth. The man's eyes grew round, and he skittered off. As soon as they were out of sight, the three men descended on Asher. Rory crouched next to the man whose back had been flayed open with a studded whip, leaving a bloody mess, raw and jagged. He met the grim faces of the other two, all of them originally from the Isle of Skye, a western isle off Bonnie Scotland. "Bloody fuck," he said, and the other two nodded. All four of them were hardened warriors and would fight England until their last drop of blood. They hadn't been captured at the embarrassing Scottish loss at Solway Moss, but had been traded for more important family members after they were captured. Rory, Cyrus, Keenan, and Asher were left to pay the price of a weakened Scotland, abandoned by their clans, forgotten. "I'll send the ransom money within the month." Alistair MacLeod's words were a distant promise now. Rory had believed his father until months went by without a word or a coin. Keenan checked Asher's pulse. "He's alive. Let's get him to the pallet." Cyrus punched his fist into his other hand. "We need to leave here now." "Aye," Rory said, "but first we need to get Ash walking again." "Dumb fool," Keenan huffed, "trying to leave on his own." Cyrus snorted, and telling Wharton to shove the other prisoner's bribes up his arse until he could taste the silver on his tongue didn't help him either. The fact was, the four Highlanders from Skye hadn't been sent any coins with which to bribe Wharton to give them extra food and care. 'Twas as if their clans had decided they were already dead. Would Rory's older brother tell their cloistered sister, Ellery, that he had died down in England, even though he'd survived the battle at Solway Moss? Would she insist on a funeral, even without a body?
"We need to work together," Rory said, his voice a low grumble, "not break out on our own."
Cyrus, Keenan, and Rory lifted the McNichol warrior and set him as gingerly as they could on the rumpled pallet. How easily they worked together now, when at first they'd hated one another. The adage was true. The enemy of an enemy is a friend.
"I'll ask Mirella for clean water, some spirits and rags," Cyrus said.
Since he was the one who smiled the easiest, he'd been the one to charm the keeper's daughter when they were still treated as possible allies by King Henry. The English tyrant thought he could persuade Highlanders to his side against King James of Scotland. Rory didn't know who he hated more, the king or those Scotsmen who assured him they'd back English rule over Scotland and all of Henry's religious dictates.
"Ointment too," Keenan said. "Ash's back will fester." "He might still die," Rory said, inspecting the weeping skin on the man's back.
Ash had tried to escape with a small dagger, but was overpowered by four guards with muskets and swords. Asher hadn't warned his cellmates he planned to attack when he was taken from their cell, after volunteering to work on a new wall at the castle. They hadn't seen him for 2 days when Mirella snuck down to tell them he'd been caught and was being whipped.
"Wharton is practically starving us," Keenan said, his voice low.
They did get 2 meals a day and ale, but for 4 warriors the amount wasn't adequate to keep up their strength, especially when surviving the constant cold.
"We need to get out."
Keenan went to the small barred window cut through the stone wall and peered out at the damp grass that had grown green with spring.
"If we were but birds to fly away," he said.
Despair was making them all a bit mad. Keenan sucked in the fresh wind like it was a meal.
"Da Vinci has made plans for a flying machine," he murmured to himself. "Where did Ash get the ski and do?" Rory asked, ignoring Keenan's ramblings.
Cyrus grabbed one of the woven blankets they'd each received from an anonymous benefactor for Beltane. Made from thick, warm wool, each one had come with a printed tag penned with their names.
"I saw him picking away at the hem, plucking the strings," Cyrus said, pinching the edge and looking at it closely in the light from the window.
But there had only been one blade, and it was gone. Rory grabbed his own blanket and slid his fingers along the bulky seam. A thin, hard object sat near a corner.
"There's something here," he whispered, and bit down on the threads binding the blanket.
He plucked the threads away and worked a hard piece of iron from the hole he'd created.
"'Tis a key."
He held it up. It had minimal teeth, so it could work in numerous locks.
"A skeleton key."
Glancing at the bars, he tucked it away quickly.
"Coins." Keenan worked them out of his own blanket. 8 gold crowns. Cyrus kept running his fingers around the edge of his blanket and shook his head. I don't feel. He stopped and held the edge to his ear. But I hear something. He bit hard at a seam and pulled out a piece of paper. Without reading it aloud, he passed it to each of them. The Renegade. Captain Bunch. Dock at Girvan Port. Cyrus looked up at Rory.
The Renegade? 'Tis a ship. One that will take us north to Skye, Keenan asked.
Rory exhaled.
As long as it gets us out of England. If we work together, we have a chance of making it past the guards, Keenan said, stretching his arms overhead.
He nodded at Asher.
All 4 of us.
The 3 looked at each other, the question of whether to leave the man who tried to escape on his own already answered. There were 4 enemies on the Isle of Skye, each of them belonging to a different feuding clan, raised to hate each other. But here, in a dank cell in northwestern England, they'd become brothers.
Chapter 1 Clacken Beach, made of minute pieces of calcified algae known as miarl. When miarl dies, the hardened skeleton is crushed by the action of waves and then washed up on the shore, where it is bleached to a brilliant white by the sun. BritainExpress.com. Western shore of the Isle of Skye, Scotland. 25th of June, 1544. Rory MacLeod threw the short length of grey driftwood toward the lapping waves. Gus, his ancient wolfhound, loped after it. The whitecaps farther out in the bay off Clacken Beach churned up low waves. The water stretched onto the shore to grab and tumble the pebbles and shells, making them clatter against one another as they washed back into the sea. Rory breathed in deeply of the sea air, letting the salt tang sting his nose. There was a hint of smoke from the inland crop fields that were being burned to promote better growth, but the sea breeze pushed it back. Rory hoped the freedom in the wind would cleanse away the taint of imprisonment and betrayal that mouldered in his chest like an illness. He preferred the outdoors now, after being locked away in Carlisle Dungeon for over a year. Gus trotted to him, the driftwood stick caught in his crooked teeth.
Kuma, Rory said, tugging it from the dog's bite.
He threw it, and the wind caught the stick, hurling it into the salty froth. Gus turned, joy in his slow trot, as he ran after it. Poor old beast. He'd likely been ignored while Rory was locked away. He turned his face southward, where his clan castle, Dunvegan, sat on a sheltered inlet from the sea, a hill blocking sight of the hulking fortress from the beach. How he'd longed for it, and the surrounding hills, forests, and this very strand of unique white beach. His brother, Jamie, said Rory had sold his soul to the devil to escape, because he'd worked with sons of their enemies on Skye. Rory rubbed a thumb across his palm where 4 knife scars sat in red lines, healed but not yet faded.
But I didn't sell my soul to England, he said, the words caught by the wind.
If Jamie had traded places with their father instead of Rory, Jamie wouldn't have survived. It had taken the 4 Highland warriors working together to escape back to their homes on the Isle of Skye, each of them using their special skills and the anonymous gift sent in blankets. The mystery of their benefactor had yet to be solved. The wind blew the sweat dry in Rory's hair. He'd been training since dawn on his horse, Airgid, with the other MacLeod warriors on the moor outside the village of Dunvegan. The men had rotated, half training with sword and horse, and the other half tending the fields of fire. Rory had taken his turn walking along the edge of the barley field that would grow all the better with the weeds burned away, so taking a dip in the cold salt water would cleanse his body as well as his soul. The call of a bird made him look upward. He spotted the black crow and followed it, turning to scan the white crescent of beach where the blue-green water pushed froth up higher with the incoming tide. Smoke rose from over the hill in contrast to the cool view of tumbling waves. His gaze lifted to Knockmoor Arroain, a hill covered in green grasses and wildflowers above the shoreline. A woman stood on the ridge, her full skirts tugged by the wind which caught her long auburn hair, swirling it around. For a second, another lass from years ago flashed through Rory's memory, one who'd stood there being whipped by her own hair. But Madeline was no more, and yet his biggest shame haunted him still. He shook his head and refocused on the hill. The field burned beyond the woman, and she moved forward out of the smoke. She raised her arms, and he could imagine her as a Celtic goddess leaving a swath of destruction behind her, her magic making her hair rise like rays of a sun out from her head. Unease pricked his shoulder blades even a decade after Madeline. This woman was no phantom. She was likely a guest for his brother's wedding on the morrow. The bride travelled from Dunscaith Castle on the Sleet Peninsula of Skye, which was a 2-day slow ride to the south, so MacDonald's had been arriving over the last couple days. The woman pointed down the shore from where he stood, yelling, but the wind snatched away her words. Rory turned to where she'd pointed, and his heart lurched.
Shite!
He broke into a run across the shifting pieces of shell and crystallized seaweed toward Gus in the water. The dog was farther out than he should be, his wiry snout barely above the surface, his teeth clinging to the driftwood that Rory had thrown.
Dang it,
Rory cursed, yanking off one boot and then the other. The broken pieces of hardened seaweed jabbed into his feet, but non-lethal pain meant little, and he hardly noticed it as he ran toward the surf.
Swim!
Underwater currents had been known to suck a man out to sea. Had Gus been caught in one? He was old, nearly 11 years now, and the large breed did not usually live past a decade. Rory yanked off his tunic as he ran and unbuckled his belt, dropping his plaid wrap that would only weigh him down in the angry sea. Water sprayed up around him as he lifted his knees high, charging into the stinging iciness of the water. Gus's face went under a wave. With another leap, Rory dove, his hands pointed out before him. His fingers jabbed into the shaggy body of his best friend, and his arms wrapped around the struggling dog. They broke the surface together, water in Rory's eyes.
I've got ye,
he yelled, pulling the large, warm body against him as he pushed them upward, his feet shifting in the sand underneath, making him wobble. Salt water stung his eyes as it dripped down his forehead. Underwater, the currents tugged hard at his legs, but he ploughed forward toward shore, taking huge steps against the pool. Icy daggers sliced across him, but the pain was invigorating. Gus continued to whip his head around as if searching for the bloody stick.
I'll find ye another one, Rory said.
He wouldn't be throwing it in the surf again.
Your throw led him too deep.
The woman's voice made Rory's face snap up, and he stopped in the water that fell about his hips, just high enough to cover him while balancing Gus's huge wet body. The lass from the hill held her green skirts higher and kicked off her slippers to wade a bit into the surf, as if ready to help pull his dog to shore. A generous mouth sat in a smooth oval face, with a straight nose and rosy cheeks, but it was her eyes that stood out. They were large and blue. The outer edges tipped upward, giving her a magical look, like she was one of the fairy folk who'd given his clan the fairy flag so long ago. Her hair was lashed with gold and red, and fell forward over her shoulders as she waded toward him.
"Do you need help with him?"
she asked. Rory shifted the large dog in his arms, ignoring the water trying to suck him back out, like he was prey that it hated to lose.
Nay, he said, if ye come out here, then I'll have to rescue ye too.
I can swim, she said with a frown.
Not with all those petticoats.
He cursed low as the sand and shells shifted under his feet. His frozen ballocks had crawled back inside him. Invigorating as the icy water was, he needed to get out.
I'm unclothed.
Shall I turn away so as not to embarrass you?
Turn around or swoon and all.
He shrugged as best he could with the 140-pound wet dog in his arms.
But I can't help a fainting lass when I'm helping my dog.
That generous mouth of hers turned up at the corners.
I'd help the dog before a fainting female, too.
Rory stepped out of the water and lowered Gus onto the shells before trudging to his discarded plaid and belt. The woman hadn't turned away. Did the lass know that icy water made a man's ballocks and cock pull up as if to hide in the warmth of his body? His mouth opened to explain, but he stopped himself before he looked like a fool.
Dang it.
He wrapped himself in his plaid with hardly the right number of pleats, but it would hold with his belt nonetheless.
You poor thing,
the woman said, and Rory turned to see her crouching before Gus, checking his paws.
I have salve up at the castle.
Rory glanced down at the bloody tracks he'd left on some rocks and the crystallized seaweed and shells.
Ephraim, he cursed.
The woman backed up, studying him from under long lashes. You live up at Dunvegan Castle. Her speech seemed more refined, keeping each syllable evident. Blue ribbons crisscrossed her bodice, fitting it to her body, making her gentle curves evident.
Some of the time, he answered.
With his brother and his mistress trysting in shadowed corners, Rory had learned to stay out of the castle and was planning to make a permanent move out to one of the old tower houses. A small pinch appeared between her brows that looked like disappointment. And this is your sweet pup? Gus plopped down, making it clear he was worn out, and she scratched his head.
Aye. He used to swim off this beach all the time, Rory said, grabbing his tunic. But he's getting older.
What's his name?
Gus, short for Angus of the Northern Hills.
She smiled, and her eyes glittered with mirth. A valiant name for a valiant beast.
I found him nearly starved and covered in mud on a journey in the northern mountains on the mainland. That was long ago now.
He was quite fortunate, she said, taking Gus's massive head in both her hands and scratching behind his ears. She didn't seem to care that his dog was filthy and wet. The woman laughed as Gus licked her cheek, and Rory noticed a fine sprinkling of freckles flicked like pale stars across her nose. What cloudy eyes you have, she said. You're old indeed. Have you lived a glorious life chasing hares and birds?
Aye, he has.
Rory turned to jam his cut feet into his boots. He caught the lass staring at him. Her expressive eyes snapped up to meet his gaze, and he guessed from their whiteness that she'd seen the scars on his back from the flaying he'd received compliments of the English king. He threw on his tunic, letting it hang loose. There are ointments you can apply to help them fade, she said without a trace of pity, although her face had grown serious. Even so, he stiffened and studied her. Sunlight played across the streaks of gold in her hair. Her hands looked strong and gentle at the same time.
Ye know about scars?
She stared at him, unafraid to meet his gaze. So the lass was brave. Yes, she said. Some fade, some do not. But I think yours are the kind that fade. The woman took a full inhale through her nose, the edges of her lips relaxing. I make an oil with blaberry, lavender and rosemary, she said, to rub in. She spoke with confidence, her knowledge as bright as her eyes. She wiggled her feet into her slippers and then squatted to kiss Gus's black nose. Still crouched, she turned her face to Rory. You could put some on his feet, too, although he'd probably lick it off. She turned her face away from Gus's big tongue, and Rory's wolfhound licked her ear, making her laugh and scrunch her neck on that side as if it tickled. The woman had pretty little earlobes.
Has anyone ever tugged on them? With their teeth?
The thought shot straight to his randy cock, which had most definitely thawed. She straightened, but smiled down at the dog. I wager your big tongue gets you into trouble, Gus. My tongue gets me into trouble, too. The image of her licking an ear rammed into Rory's mind.
Your tongue, he said,
and he turned back to meet his gaze. His brows rose and he gave a lopsided grin.
What type of trouble does it get into?
He hadn't felt like smiling for a long time. She tucked some of her whipping hair behind that sweet ear and huffed. I meant that I speak before I consider how my words might be construed. She flapped her hand at him. Like right then.
I rather like how ye talk before considering your words.
She pinched her lips into a serious line, but her eyes sparked with humour. You would be the first person to commend me for carelessly speaking what's in my mind. Her gaze slid to the hill behind him and then back to meet his gaze. I must go, but first, are you, by chance, Jamie MacLeod? The abrupt change in topic took him a moment. Rory's grin collapsed back into the frown that seemed to have become a permanent feature over the last years. But before he could answer, a bellow from up on the hillside made her spin away. Sweet Mother Mary, she said, and Rory followed her gaze to the man standing on the hill above the beach. She patted Gus's wet head and turned away. Good day to you, she called back as she hurried back up the hill. her skirts held higher so she could move at a pace that was as fast as a run, but looked like a walk. She stopped, glancing back at him.
"I will see you again, I think."
She hurried off, her red-hued tresses flying in the wind behind her. The lass was bonny, but there was some other quality that tugged at Rory. Perhaps her kindness to Gus, or the genuine tone to her words, as if she had nothing to hide. Rory's chest clenched. Madeline had possessed a guileless air about her, and Rory's trust in her had seen her dead.
Chapter 2. Set your life on fire. Seek those who fan your flames. Jalal ad-Din Muhammad Rumi, 1207 to 1273. Persian poet and philosopher. Walter MacDonald grabbed Sarah's arm in a bruising hold. He sniffed with his red nose and screwed up his whiskered face in a grimace. "Ye smell of smoke, Serafina," he said, using her full name, which she hated, "and wet dog." His gaze moved to her neckline. "Keep your dress up, else someone will see your mark. Can't have the MacLeod calling off." Sarah tugged on the neckline near her shoulder, making sure to hide the red swathe of skin that curved to her back. The mark had been part of her since birth, never fading. Her aunt Morag said she'd seen it once on a girl's face, and no amount of poultices nor prayers made it disappear. Sarah was grateful her mark ran under her clothing. But what would her husband think of it? The swathe of red across her skin was ugly, and she was ugly because of it. Her father had been reticent about marrying her off, saying that her husband would refuse once he saw her devil's mark. Apparently, Walter MacDonald didn't care what the MacLeods thought of her blemish. She felt her cheeks warm. Hopefully, her groom would look past her ugliness to her usefulness. Sarah glanced over her shoulder, but couldn't see the beach. Could the man be her bridegroom? Jamie MacLeod? He'd said it was his beach, and Dunvegan sat over the rise to the south. He was handsome, and had the chiselled body of a warrior. Her cheeks warmed, remembering the taut muscles of his arse and legs as he walked away from her to retrieve his plaid. "What are you doing wandering so close to Dunvegan?" her father demanded. "And the fires?" "I came to see where I'll live," she said. "I didn't know they were burning fields today." She tried to snatch her arm back, but her father held so tightly that she quickly gave up. "If you leave black and blue marks on me, father, the MacLeods will say you beat me. 'Twill be talked about all across Skye before midsummer." Walter released her arm, and she rubbed it as she walked slightly behind him, his familiar stuttering gait making it easy for her to keep up. They traversed the narrow cut through the high grasses covering the edge of moorland.
"Who was the man with the hound?" Walter asked. "He could have taken you, used you, then you'd be no good to marry."
"He didn't seem a threat, father." And he might be her bridegroom. She thought of him racing in to save his dog, and the flutter of heat that had pooled in her abdomen as he stared at her intently. "Lord, please let him be my groom."
"If a man's got a cod, he's a threat," her father said. He threw his hand out wide. "This is MacLeod territory, and they are all tricksters and raiders who plunder and steal.
And yet, you are having me marry one," she said, unable to keep the words in. She'd been hearing all her life how all the other clans on the Isle of Skye were worse than Lucifer, how the only way to gain peace was to rule the whole isle.
"Your husband can do what he likes to you," Walter said. Heat prickled up in Sarah's cheeks at the horrible notion. He was saving his dog from the sea. A man who risked his life for something weaker than himself must have a good heart.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?